From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. In spite of today's rain, the drought situation in southwest Florida is still severe. Wildfires continue, farmers are fretting over livestock with nothing to graze on, and meteorologists are looking ahead for some relief. We'll talk about that climate forecast, check in with fire mitigation experts about the special dangers of bone-dry conditions, and talk with agricultural extension agents about the impacts seen on area farms. Plus, they're called the Jongmadong Generation, also known as the Market or even the Black Market Generation. They're the youngest generation of North Koreans, millennials in one of the most unusual countries in the world. A new documentary screening tonight at Florida Gulf Coast University peels back the headlines about North Korea's missile programs and military to talk about the humanitarian crisis the North Korean people face and why this youngest generation in what's been called the Hermit Kingdom may be the best hope for change. First, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. North Korea dominates headlines for its missile programs, assassinations of family members connected to the ruling elite, and other acts that have earned it the nickname as the Hermit Kingdom. But a new documentary screening tonight at Florida Gulf Coast University hopes to show how a new generation of North Korean millennials is slowly changing the nation's ruling elite and may be the country's best hope for change. And change is no small matter for North Korea, since the nation has faced historic famines as recently as the 1990s and is considered home to some of the worst human rights abuses anywhere on the globe. Joining us to talk about the rescue team group at FGCU, which is focused on the plight of the North Korean people, and to talk about this new documentary that the group is screening on campus tonight is FGCU Rescue Team President Tatiana Galdamez. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hello.
Thanks for being here. We are talking about North Korea, the people in that isolated nation, and the human rights abuses that they face every day. A documentary about their plight is screening tonight at FGCU. Do you have any experiences with North Korea or thoughts on the situation? Give us a call and share those thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So Tatiana Galdamez with the FGCU Rescue Team. Tell me a little bit about this group and what you do here at FGCU when it comes to North Korea.
Okay, so Rescue Team's focus is to spread awareness and raise money for North Korean refugees with the help of Liberty North Korea, which is an organization, a nonprofit based in California. And they kind of serve as a resource for information as well as guidance in terms of planning events and keeping up to date with what's going on in North Korea. We actually are not the only rescue team in the nation. They're actually found throughout the nation at college campuses and high schools even, and they all focus on the same thing.
So who's in your group, for example? Who would be a member of a rescue team?
Honestly, it can be anybody on campus. As of right now, there's a freshman in the club who has been an active member who has helped me plan events a lot. It doesn't have any limitations as to who could join. Seeing as how our goal is to spread awareness, so the more people we can reach, the better. Even the staff is welcome to come to our meetings and such as well.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any people in your group that are from South Korea?
No, we do not, unfortunately. I do from a different program. I'm in contact with international students consistently, but as of right now, we do not have any students from South Korea
participating. How do people join? Do they just kind of show up at meetings and ask to be part of the group?
We do have a Facebook page, and we also table every so often, every couple of weeks, to advertise that we are on campus, we're active, we care, and that anybody can join. So for instance, we'll have a table for 2 to 3 hours in the morning on a Wednesday, and we'll hand out flyers, have people sign up, write down their email, and we can notify them of when we're meeting, as well as any upcoming events, that sort of thing.
It's kind of interesting because it's very hard to know anything about North Korea.
Oh yeah, big time. It's the Hermit Kingdom. It's the most isolated country in the world. And a lot of people, although they know of it, because it's known for its isolation, a lot of people can't really tell you much about it.
Yeah. I mean, well, people don't really know a whole lot about it. But so what got you interested in it?
Actually, I first became interested in North Korea and its history when I was 16. I was in high school and I had a history teacher who mentioned how in North Korea, there's only one fixed channel that they have to tune into. And I was fascinated. I was like, how is this still going on in the 21st century? So the summer after that, I was dual enrolled in a sociology class in college, a community college near me. And I did a paper on it. And I was just shocked that people weren't talking about it, considering that this is the 21st century and there's still a country where the people aren't informed about the outside world, and also that they aren't always allowed to express themselves they want to, you know.
Mm-hmm. So your local group is one of dozens of rescue teams, like you mentioned, at college campuses across the country, and you're connected to a nonprofit known as LINK, which is an acronym for Liberty in North Korea. Tell me a little bit about that organization and what they do.
Okay, perfect. I actually spoke to an intern today earlier from Liberty North Korea as like a refresher. But what they do is they have various departments within Liberty North Korea where some of them focus on their refugee rescues, so they can actually help defectors from North Korea escape from China, because obviously, you know, that's an ally of North Korea. And if they get caught there, they get sent back to the country and face very, I think, awful punishments, you know. So what they do is they help them go from there and go through a 3,000-mile journey across Southeast Asia to be able to resettle in places such as South Korea and the United States, which are places where they have headquarters. So I'm not allowed to disclose too much information about the journey in order to protect confidentiality, but it is an arduous journey. To provide some perspective, it's the equivalent of trying to travel from New York to Los Angeles.
On foot?
So, it can be on foot, on buses, that sort of thing, but they have to be very, very careful. Although they have some partners within China that they communicate, they can get caught throughout various countries. And if they do, they can get to prison, and then the refugees themselves can be sent back to North Korea. Mm-hmm. They do also, as of right now, they are focusing more on the rescues and the resettlement, although they do help them learn English, acquire skills, and attain a higher education, that sort of thing.
And they're just really specifically focused on North Korea.
Yes.
So we reached out to some LINK representatives to join our show today, and many of the staff who could best speak with us were actually traveling in South Korea. Mm-hmm. But here's a portion of one of the documentaries that helps explain their work with North Korean refugees. Let's listen.
Kim Jong-un was officially named Supreme Commander.
I love him. I love the guy.
Say you're
awesome.
Living in a tightly controlled society like North Korea.
What we see in the news about North Korea is not the whole story. Beyond the hype around nuclear weapons and Kim Jong-un are 24 million people, just like you and me. But they face the most oppressive regime on Earth. Imagine this. If you were born in North Korea, you'd be forced to worship your leaders. You'd be denied access to the internet. If you dared to share a foreign movie with your friends, you could be publicly executed. And if you disagree with these policies and speak out, you could be tortured and end up in a political prison camp and see your whole family punished along with you. This level of systematic oppression doesn't exist anywhere else on Earth. So, why can't you just leave? It's impossible to get through the heavily militarized border between North and South Korea, so the only way out is north, past electrified fences and armed guards, and across the river into China. But even if you make it out, you're still not safe. The Chinese government doesn't accept North Koreans as refugees. Instead, they arrest and return those trying to flee. So after risking your life to escape the most brutal regime on Earth, you and your whole family still might be caught and sent back to North Korea to face torture, imprisonment, and forced labor. If you're a female North Korean refugee, you're in grave danger of being sold into a forced marriage or trafficked into the sex industry. This is happening today. In order to reach safety and freedom, North Korean refugees have to escape through a 3,000-mile secret rescue route all the way into Southeast Asia. This route is extremely dangerous. And as a refugee, it's almost impossible to make the journey alone.
So when you hear that and then you think about current leaders meeting today in Florida, you have President Trump and the Chinese meeting. Do you get hopeful that maybe somebody can get China to change its mind about sending these refugees back?
I think it's a very difficult thing to do just because of the history of North Korea and China. Going back to even the 50s, they were someone who served as a resource, as well as Russia, for North Korea. And although they don't have, I'd say, the best alliance, I don't think China benefits from keeping the refugees. And I think that unless someone provided them with something that would help them, they may not change their mind. I might be wrong. I would love to see some change. Yeah. But as of right now, no, I don't think it's a priority for most people. And I don't think it's a priority for China at the moment.
So you're with the FGCU rescue team is what it's called. So how does LINK connect rescue teams like yours on college campuses with their messaging? Is it basically like the rescue team is here to kind of share what Link is doing?
Yes and no. We definitely do share what Link does to show that if people donate, their money is going to the cause, and also to show that we do have credible information, that we're not just sharing information off the internet. We do have a credible source backing us up. But most of all, we see ourselves as our own club, but we are also part of the cause, if that makes sense. We're two parts of the same cause. We have a same goal, and they serve as kind of a tool, as guidance. But we are allowed to do our own thing. Like, we don't have to report to them consistently.
Yeah, but having an umbrella organization like that, that's more national and international, it kind of gives you a little bit more cred.
Oh, yeah, big time. Big time. Because people want to know their money is going to the cause. And also, it allows us to get inspired as well. For example, like, we tend to be a relatively small group, and sometimes we may be at a loss as to how to appeal to college students. But even within the organizations themselves, and Liberty in North Korea, there are people our age who are interns there who can provide insight, and we all have the same goal. So it's very inspiring, and it helps people be more open to hearing what we have to say as well.
Yeah, exactly. We are talking about a new documentary that's screening tonight at FGCU about the plight of North Korean refugees and a new generation of North Korean millennials that are known as the Black Market Generation. Call in and share your thoughts about North Korea and how the world engages with this isolated country at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So Tatiana Galdamez with the FGCU Rescue Team, tell us what you can about the documentary that you're screening tonight at FGCU. The title is The Jongmadong Generation, which is also known as the Market or even the Black Market Generation. What does that name mean? What is it referring to?
Well, that name refers to the most recent rise of markets, because it is a socialist country and the government is supposed to be in control of most of what's going on, how people make their money. However, due to a famine in the 90s, many people had to resort to private markets that, although initially were taken down by the government, became so popular among the residents that it became hard to control, which is why currently it's known as the Black Market Generation, and younger people are becoming more aware through this market, actually.
So these are kids, like, well, they're in their 20s maybe.
Yeah.
And they, when they were growing up and they were little kids, they were going to these markets with their parents maybe.
Yes. It started because of the famine. And so the older generations didn't have that. They relied solely on the government and that sort of thing. But through the markets, these young people grew up around that. So they had more access to information.
And they were kind of exposed a little bit to free trade.
Yeah. Yeah. They were definitely exposed to free trade, which also gave them skills that previous generations may not have been able to acquire because of the way the regime works. So these are people who they went through great lengths to survive, but in a different manner than those, their predecessors, essentially.
So they were kind of raised seeing these markets that came up as a result of the famine. And now that they're in their 20s, they are probably trying to keep these markets alive. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of how they got their name as the market generation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, most definitely. And even last year, at the end of last year, unfortunately, there was a flood in North Korea that displaced a lot of them. But I think it also inspired a lot of them to either defect or become more aware and even go through greater lengths to maintain these markets, that sort of thing.
So one of the items available at these black markets in North Korea is media, like books and movies, which if you're caught with, you can get some serious and severe penalties. Here's a portion of an interview with Sokil Park, Liberty in North Korea's Director of Research and Strategy. He says people in North Korea are willing to risk these punishments because of a very basic human desire.
They like watching a South Korean film with the risk of going to prison and, you know, potentially your family being punished as well. It may seem like a trivial thing to risk for that level of punishment. And so the biggest thing that comes through is because there's been so much censorship by the North Korean government for so long, North Korean people have really been starved of not just films or TV programs that might seem trivial, but culture in general, you know, entertainment. the different kinds of outlets, different kinds of stories, you know, literature, books, all of these things are very restricted in North Korea. And it's just a very human desire to try and engage with the world in a different way, whether it be through books or films or the radio or whatever it is. And so because the North Korean people have been so starved of that, I think it means that people are willing to take bigger risks than maybe we would think of when we, you know, we grew up with such easy access to these kind of things. So we have a very different perspective on it. And the one thing to add to that as well is that over the last few years, it has actually become more risky, more dangerous for North Koreans to try and access foreign media. And if they're caught, then, you know, we hear that the punishments are getting harsher and longer and so on. But nonetheless, North Koreans still have that demand for foreign media to learn about the outside world and to accelerate their own kind of independent thinking and questioning of the North Korean regime's ideologies and narratives. So this is getting more difficult in some ways, but the North Korean people's drive to access it is matching that, and so it's still increasing.
So Tatiana Galdamez with the FGCU Rescue Team. Does the documentary show anything about this aspect of North Korean culture, the lack of culture and the lack of media or books or anything?
Yes, I think it does. Overall, I think it's an issue that needs to be addressed, and they do it really well. It's something that with today's technology is a more recent thing. So in previous documentaries, it focused on other issues such as the poverty, the starvation, but now it's talking more about the human desires to know more and to know more what about the outside world and what freedom may be to other people when for them they thought they had freedom when in reality it's not as it seems, sort of thing.
It's really an intriguing look at this particular generation that just got a little taste of a market and a little taste of what things could be like, and that they've carried it into their 20s and they're kind of reaching out like this.
Oh, yes. And I think that it's also the age that's important, too. As someone who's in their early 20s, or I am 20, I think we're all trying to establish our lives, and seeing as how they grew up being exposed to this, I believe they're more open to learning about it. Although they are risking their lives, they at a young age were exposed to it, and therefore that desire has been growing over the course of years. It hasn't just been introduced to them. And also with today's technology, it's been a consistent thing. So it's not like they've been introduced slowly. It's been with the development of flash drives, that has helped a lot. For instance,
they're so small, yeah.
Yeah, they're small, they're convenient, and they can store a lot. So mm-hmm. rather than just smuggling in, let's say,
like a
one
stack
disc
of DVDs,
yes,
right?
Which is a lot riskier because mm-hmm. they do random inspections occasionally within North Korea. So it's very dangerous to have things like that. But a USB is a lot easier to hide and to even hide on one's person. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot easier to learn more now.
So North Korea is notoriously closed off from the world. So how are they able to get a documentary done about it? I mean, does a documentary, it doesn't go there, but how do they talk to people that have left?
Yes. Defectors are definitely talking about their experiences. It is hard to come by sometimes with defectors who want to talk about it just because it is a danger in case they have family in North Korea.
Well, and they've lived their whole life in fear anyway.
Yeah, which is true. Yeah, to some extent. But they do occasionally come across some defectors who want to share their story to possibly get across to other refugees who may be seeking asylum or trying to defect if by any chance, you know, it gets smuggled in or if that information relays over to them. But yeah, it's a great source. It really is. It's I can't disclose too much, but it really shows how human we all really are rather than just labeling people as refugees. That's all they are. It goes into the that sort of thing.
Well, they're going to be heading a steep learning curve, too, because there have been reports. So far, 600 people have been rescued by the LINK, which is Liberty in North Korea, the agency that's above that kind of oversees. But 28,000 right now from North Korea are settled among 50 million South Koreans. And a lot of those people have said that it's like stepping out of a time machine. Like, it's completely different. And, I mean, tell me a little bit about some of the different things they're going to have to learn. I mean, they probably haven't even seen a computer.
Okay, so to
or maybe whatever they've seen has been so limited.
Oh yeah, even the people, the elite who do have computers, only have very limited access to certain articles, most likely related to the Kim regime, that sort of thing. But most people don't have access. People do have access to televisions, but you know it's supposed to be on the fixed channel. In terms of learning, I recently came across a commercial for an app that actually helps translate North Korean to South Korean because the language, because of the history, is slightly different. So that in itself, I think, is incredible.
Just the languages are different.
Yeah, just slightly. It's not huge, but some words because...
Like a dialect or something.
Yeah, even some words because in South Korea, the Korean has some American influences due to history. Some words are completely different. And they've recently created an app to help address that. Another thing, too, is even learning about history, I believe that the Olympics is taught completely different. The outcome within North Korea is taught completely different alone. Like, who wins? Typically, I think in the last one, it was said that North Korea won. I don't know if North Korea was the winner of the Olympics, that sort of thing, to help promote that, you know, it's the greatest country, you should love your country, and that sort of thing. So there are a lot of things, even critical thinking skills. I came across an article and a video once of a woman who went in disguise as a teacher. I believe she was a journalist who went in disguise as a teacher. And she said that even the critical thinking skills, a lot of them, especially the newer generation, can apply those a lot better. They are people, they do think for themselves, they feel, you know, but a lot of the students didn't know how to apply them because they were never asked to think for themselves. So just that basic human instinct almost to want to think for oneself is a little difficult.
Well, you've been programmed since you were small. Yeah. And I think that their social skills would probably be a little bit different too.
Actually, that's the one of the misconceptions that I had up until recently, even reading a couple articles and that sort of thing. I used to believe that the sense of paranoia created artificial, superficial bonds between people. But actually seeing a couple of documentaries and reading more upon it, a lot of these people are actually – they make do of what they have, and they actually form very close relationships because they can only trust a few select people. So, for example, like the smugglers, they have to make sure that they can trust the people that they are trading with. And they have to make sure that, for example, if they have to exchange currency or if they want to sell their products, they have to be very, very selective of who they do so in case they do get reported or caught. So I do believe that it may be difficult for them, especially in a world where they don't know much of what's going on and there's so much they don't understand. But in terms of being sociable, I think that they have a lot to share. And there's even a show within South Korea, I can't remember what it's called, that I definitely think people should check out, that's about North Korean defectors sharing their stories and trying to find their family members. And it really shows the human side of them and helps you see them as people, as happy people who just unfortunately were not lucky enough to have the resources to get by and were unfortunately controlled by their government.
Well, they were born in that country.
Exactly.
And so they didn't really have a choice in that matter. So your group raises awareness about North Korea and its people. What are some of the things that you like to let people know about the people of North Korea? Do you like trying to just break down the government is not the millions of people that live there?
Yes, big time. Actually, that's one of the things that Liberty North Korea, I think, does wonderfully. One of their sayings is people over politics. I actually have a poster that says that. And it's to people over politics, I think, is very important because when people only look at the political aspects of things, they tend to choose to pick a side. But they don't really think about the people who really need help, which are people like you and me, everyday people who have families and are just trying to get by. And I think it's very important to bring awareness about the little people and then keep people up to date with the political aspects of it because they aren't separate groups. The people's government is the Kim regime, you know, mm-hmm. And the Kim regime's people are these everyday people. And you can't help them until you know what their plights are.
Mm-hmm. So this documentary is going to be screening tonight?
Yes, from 7 to 8 p.m. in Merwin Hall 124.
Okay.
And yeah, it will be a relatively short screening, and we will be open to discussion afterwards if anyone would like to join. I think it's a very great resource that is not currently accessible to everyone. So I think it's a very great opportunity to learn more about North Korea and even just to be able to join a movement Even if you can't actively be a part of rescue team, just in being part of the group that spreads awareness and addresses the misconceptions of people, you can do so much.
And also educating oneself. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now. I want to thank you, Tatiana Galdamez, with the FGCU Rescue Team. They're bringing this documentary about North Korean millennials and the human rights crisis in North Korea to FGCU for a screening tonight. Links for more information about that documentary and tonight's screening are online at wgcunews.org/Gulf Coast Live. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.